boys and girls, ladies and gents, this is Ayatollah Bin. Welcome to another episode of the Your Brain Uncovered show, where it's my job to interview pioneering scientists and authors to tease out some of their most fascinating work. I'm inspired and excited to welcome my guest for today's episode, Dr. Laura Smith, that is S-M-I-T-H. She's a lecturer in cognitive psychology at the University of Kent and happens to specialize in understanding the psychological and biological basis of human cognition, with an interest, you know, to developing more effective therapies for individuals with neurological disorders. Dr. Laura Smith, welcome to the show. It's an honor to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be able to speak to you all today.
Oh, thank you. So today, Dr. Laura will be offering some illuminating insight into the links between our vestibular system and cognitive system. We're going to be getting more into the nuts and bolts of this. I just want you to look back. Have you ever remembered a time where you felt dizzy as a child after you've jumped off a swing or a trampoline? These feelings, they result from activation of the vestibular system, and this is what we're going to be diving into today. So Dr. Laura, I'm going to be striking you with a question, which is, what is the main function of the vestibular system?
Yeah, that's a good point for us to start off from. So the vestibular system, it's a really small organ, and it's embedded kind of deep within the skull. If you feel behind your ears, you can feel that sort of dense temple bone. Oh. And that's where it's based, nicely protected and encased there. Mm. And we have our vestibular system in itself, but it connects to lots of other different parts of the brain. And that means that its function is quite varied, as you just touched upon. So we know it helps keeps us balanced and upright.
Yeah.
And it helps us to detect our position in space. And we use that then to help tell us which direction we're going in and where we are in relation to things around us. And then it also connects with things like the visual system. So it helps us to keep things that we're looking at stable in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if you think about that, that skill that we all have now about sort of texting and walking, the vestibular system helps to keep that visual stimulus stable in front of us, so it doesn't appear like it's bobbing up and down. And then obviously it helps with us as well to coordinate our movements, so to have that sensation of where you are on the ground and coordinate the movements and have those joint position sensors all working together. I'd say they're the core things we tend to think about in relation to the vestibular system and balance.
Yes.
But if we start to kind of get a bit deeper and think about the other different roles of the vestibular system, it is connected to lots of other different parts of the brain. So we think that that also gives it a role in sort of higher level cognitive functions and things like emotion regulation as well.
Oh, wow. Okay, so as a brief overview, the vestibular system functions seem to detect head motion and position relative to gravity. And then these vestibular signals are highly processed in many regions of the brain, as you tell us. And they're essential to many functions, I guess. From a clinical and biological understanding, we've managed to get a good grip of what it does. However, if we take psychological accounts, into consideration, they remain quite limited. How would you describe, the psychological mechanisms by which the vestibular system, relates to our other systems?
Yeah, that's a really nice summary there. So you kind of touched upon the gravitational aspects and also some of the other types of sensations.
Yes.
And you're right, we know that link quite nicely. So there's two different peripheral organs within the vestibular system, the otoliths and the semicircular canal. So we know quite well what types of signals they tend to send out and how they're interpreted in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
But its role in some of the other kind of more psychological aspects, yes, we're still figuring those out.
Okay.
But I guess the biological basis really comes from where those signals from the vestibular system are transmitted.
Okay.
So the vestibular system and the vestibular sense, it's a bit different to other types of sensory organs. So if you maybe think of the sensation of smell or hearing,
yes,
the way that's organized in the brain is quite neat. So we have sort of one sensory organ that we ascend to associate with, that, so the nose or the ears, and we know where that's located in the brain, but we don't have kind of a one single area in the brain for the vestibular system in the same way. It's much more distributed.
Okay.
That means that vestibular signals are sent to lots of different regions of the brain, and that gives us a bit of an idea of then how the vestibular system becomes associated with some of these other high level functions or things like cognition and memory. Okay. So because there's these pathways that connect to regions, for example, like the insula, mm-hmm. or like the anterior cingulate cortex, or even indirect projections to things like the hippocampus,
yes.
that gives us a bit of a biological basis as to how the vestibular system could be associated with some of these aspects of cognition and emotions and mood regulation.
Okay, so does it in a sense, can we call it, does it inform our inner GPS by collecting information from different systems such as the visual and affective, and how does it do that exactly?
So in a GPS, are you talking about things maybe like navigating or spatial memory, those
yes.
kinds of things? Yes, yeah. So that probably comes from projections from the vestibular system to things like the hippocampus. So some of these pathways are indirect, so they go sort of via a few different brain regions and take a bit of an indirect route. There's connections to things like head direction cells or place cells, or regions like the back of the brain, the cerebellum.
Yes.
So by connecting to regions like this that are known to be associated with things like navigation and spatial memory,
mm-hmm.
There becomes a neural mechanism for that function that we see around spatial memory. And there's been quite a lot of research, both in animals and within humans, really trying to kind of test this out.
Okay.
And what some of those studies involve is people having vestibular structures sort of surgically removed. So in rats, that would involve kind of a lesion to get rid of those, or in humans, that might be some patients who've had to undergo a surgery to remove those structures, and that means that their vestibular organs are no longer firing, they're not receiving inputs in the way that they would typically. And then those humans or rats, they would undergo a series of tests within the lab.
Yeah.
And what they tend to involve are tasks in a sort of maze environment.
Right.
That might involve you learning to navigate to a target or a platform. And you're taught a route to navigate to, and it's quite a simple route. And then to make it a bit harder, the target or the platform will be hidden or submerged. So then you need to be able to navigate back there from memory.
Okay.
So you need to remember the route that you were taught. And what we see is that the specimens or the humans are able to do that when it's still visible, but when they need to do that just from memory, people or animals who've had the vestibular structures ablated are no longer able to do that.
Mm.
So there's quite a clear link there associated with the spatial memory aspect. There's been a few variations on those types of tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, if we speak to people who have these conditions, how that might express itself in the real world might be kind of forgetting where you've put things in the house, or becoming a bit confused, sort of finding the route to somewhere, following kind of complex directions to get somewhere, and might find yourself getting a bit muddled along the route along the way.
All right, so I mean, it's quite fascinating. It seems that these in vivo studies are truly reflecting the way, you know, in which all our systems are working in conjunction together. None of them seem to operate independently. And you elaborated a little on the connection between specifically the vestibular system and the visual system. Now, you know, to cast a little light on your recent publication, how can you please explain more in depth about the relationship between the visual memory system and the vestibular system? to someone that relatively does not know much about it, how would we go about understanding it?
Yes. So then I think if we kind of look at the vestibular system and how that relates to cognition in general, there are some sort of cognitive domains that it seems to relate more closely to. And some of those domains tend to relate to kind of spatial aspects of cognition, or visual spatial aspects of cognition. Mm-hmm. I think that's maybe where the paper you're referring to taps into.
Yes, indeed.
So tasks that tend to tap into this spatial element, so maybe remembering where something was located, or remembering a route to get to somewhere. And it can even be more subtle than that. So there's some tasks as well that relate to kind of mental arithmetic, or getting you to kind of think about the size or the shape of something. So it can be mentally rotating something. So maybe if I showed you an object and I asked you to mentally rotate that, there's a bit of a spatial element there to kind of think about how the features configure and what that would look like if it was rotated. So there's a few different kind of experimental tasks showing that spatial domains of cognition tend to relate to vestibular dysfunction in some way. And the basis for that really would be looking at those kind of neural pathways that connect to spatial regions of the brain.
Wow, okay. So, and are there any environmental factors that kind of influence this functional relationship between the two?
Yes, I think that's a good question as well. So I guess the picture I've painted so far makes it seem like the relationship's quite simple, but as you're kind of already alluding to, there's other factors that we might need to consider as well. Talking about kind of cognition in general, some other things we might want to take into consideration are whether individuals have undergone or sustained any sort of hearing loss or any damage to other parts of the ear. So maybe in those individuals who had surgery, have they lost some of the hearing as well? Because we know that that can have kind of an impact on cognition too.
Yeah.
Other things maybe to consider are age. So there's some really interesting research now coming out looking at things like Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah.
And whether there's kind of a link there between vestibular loss, the spatial memory element, and Alzheimer's.
Okay.
So one of the aspects of cognition that maybe tends to sort of deteriorate a bit earlier in Alzheimer's is that topographic memory. So again, tapping into kind of spatial memory.
Yes.
So it might be that there's some an element there. And then other things we really have to consider are sort of changes to kind of mental health as well, or things like fatigue that can have a really kind of big influence on this relationship between cognition and the vestibular system. And that can get quite complicated as well, trying to kind of muddle through whether it's really sort of the impact that the condition has had on how someone's feeling. Like all the other things that they're going through, has that then had kind of a knock-on effect on how able they are to kind of concentrate on something or motivate themselves to engage with some of these cognitive tasks?
So I feel like shedding light on this, we seem to have been taking the vestibular system for granted, really. I mean, from the time we learn to walk, balancing our bodies just becomes second nature. And the tasks that it supports us with are just something we really take for granted. But it seems that there's a huge effect to, you know, there's a huge impact to our daily functioning by any dysfunction that happens, that occurs in the vestibular system. And I just wanted to, you know how could things go wrong, really? Does it have to be a traumatic incident, or can it be something as, you know, as simple as motion sickness for us to witness these, you know, dysfunctional effects?
Yes, thank you. That's a really inquisitive question there, and I'll try and remember the different points that you just touched upon.
I'm sorry, I sound funny.
The first thing to say is that you just touched on something really kind of important there, and I think that's that when the balance system and the vestibular system are working well, you're right, that is something we kind of take for granted. And when things are working well, it's quite effortless for us to kind of walk and keep balanced, yes, and maybe walk while we're kind of looking at something or walk on uneven surfaces. But then when there is a problem, maintaining your balance is no longer kind of as easy, and it requires more sort of mental effort or processing power. And that's kind of one of the sort of cognitive theories to explain why we might see changes in things like memory or attention. So the idea is that when there's a problem, you need to spend some of your mental processing resources on keeping yourself balanced and upright, so thinking about which foot you move first or if you need to hold on to something. And then because you're spending some of those mental resources on doing that, then detracted away potentially from your ability to kind of concentrate. So maybe if you and I were sort of walking along together, I might be spending more of my mental energy sort of making sure I don't have a fall or I keep balance, and then it might be more difficult for me to kind of concentrate on our conversation, and I might sort of fall behind. So that's kind of to address the first aspect that you were saying. And then I think you kind of also touched upon that these, when there is a problem or when the vestibular system is impaired in some way, that can have a significant impact on daily activities. And certainly that does seem to be the case, that people tell us, so things like looking at screens, that can be really difficult and can make people feel quite dizzy and unwell. And then you touched upon sort of motion sickness as well. That's an interesting one. So that maybe relates to kind of something that we might call sort of visual dominance or visual vertigo.
Yeah.
This sometimes comes about if people place more reliance on the visual input. So something's gone wrong with my balance system because of that vestibular dysfunction or impairment in some way. So I'm no longer kind of trusting the signals that sends me. I don't want to trust those as much. So that means I might put more reliance on some of the other sensory inputs to help me keep balanced. In particular, I might rely more on visual inputs to help keep me balanced and use that to keep me going. And when we maybe rely too much on the vestibular, when we rely too much on visual inputs to keep us balanced, that can sometimes make us feel a bit dizzy if there's a conflict.
Yes.
And that can happen, for example, if you're in a car. So my visual inputs are maybe telling me that I'm moving, but you're perhaps not. You're sat stationary in the car and it's the other cars going past that are moving. And because there's that conflict between the sensory inputs that you're receiving, that can make you feel a bit dizzy or unwell.
All right. So can we summarize it by saying that, for example, such motion sickness can be caused by a mismatch in sensory cues between the vestibular, visual, and proprioceptive signals?
Yeah, that's a really good summary. And there's some different tasks that we can do to have a look at how much maybe reliance people are putting on different sensory signals. And you can probably have a go at this yourself at home. But if you are someone that gets quite dizzy, then maybe do it with someone else.
All right.
Yes, so if you're kind of standing upright and you can have your hands down by your side.
Yeah.
And at the moment, kind of all those signals are available to you. So you've got your vision,
yes,
because your eyes are open. And if you kind of scrunch your feet on the floor, you can feel those joint position sensors.
Awesome, yeah.
Then what we tend to do is we'll ask people to kind of close their eyes, mm-hmm, and we'll see how that affects their balance. And that's telling you kind of how much maybe reliance you place on the visual inputs.
All right.
And then what we normally tend to do then is have people stand on a bit of a foam surface.
Oh.
or something a bit more uneven or a bit harder for them to balance on.
Okay, I haven't got a foam surface, but all you listeners out there, if you have one in hand, go ahead and try it and follow the the instructions.
Yes, yeah, you can make one for yourself. So maybe for people at home, they might want to try sort of standing on a cushion or on a jumper, just something that will be a bit more of a challenge for those joint position centers under your feet. And then all we're doing there is placing, I guess, more reliance on those vestibular inner ear balance organs by taking away the vision and giving a bit more of a challenge to those joint position sensors. And that maybe gives you a bit of a sense of how much reliance you're placing on those other sensory organs and whether there might be a bit of a conflict between them. But yes, that was a really good summary that you said about the motion sickness. There tends to be a bit of a conflict between those.
Thank you. And I really hope you listeners out there do try the little experiment. Okay, so motion sickness seems like an everyday thing that we all experience, but what about, you know, the bigger issues? What about neurological disorders? How can we relate a dysfunction in the vestibular system to a neurological disorder? Can it help us predict one?
Yeah, so people with vestibular disorders, so a disorder sort of primarily affected by the vestibular system.
Yes.
Such then as, the types of symptoms.
There's this thing called vestibular neuritis, because it's such a complex term, I don't want to dive much into it, but can such a little at home experiment help predict such a thing?
So if an individual came to a clinic or to their doctor and they were sort of had experiencing symptoms, things like dizziness, so maybe experiencing spinning or vertigo, lightheadedness, a whole range of symptoms, nausea or vertigo,
yes,
then they would kind of undergo clinical history to kind of tease apart what they were experiencing, how that felt and how long that had been going on. And in addition to that, they would probably do some balance function tests.
Okay.
A battery of tests to try and tease apart how their balance system responds in different situations and how well those organs are performing. And the test that we just talked about and that maybe some people have had a go at home, that might form one of the tests within that battery. If it's done kind of properly, then we tend to call that a posturography.
Posturography. Is that it?
Yes, yeah.
All right. Got it. I was quite curious and I just wanted to, you know, to figure it out. this test can be used in conjunction with other standardized tests to predict a neurological disorder.
Yes, yeah, we'd be looking at different tasks and as well as that, like the clinical history taking, seeing what else might be going on in the background for that individual at that time.
Okay.
In their lives and try and kind of tease apart.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it seems that a lot of work has been done recently on this, but are there any, you know, gaps that you think future researchers should dive into? What would you recommend?
Oh, I think I'm a little bit biased from my perspective as a psychologist, but for me, the thing that is really kind of important to me at the moment that I'd really like to see some advances on is providing more support for the sort of psychological aspects of these conditions of the vestibular system, sort of within routine clinical care. At the moment, access to support for things like anxiety, panic, or some of these kind of brain fog, fatigue aspects is quite limited.
Okay.
So that's really where I'd like to see advances in terms of how we sort of support those and address these so that the overall rehabilitation of their vestibular condition can progress. So that's something I really, really like to look into a bit further.
Wow, thank you. And is there a specific society you recommend, like a campaign or organization that we can be, you know, donating to in any way possible?
Yes, I hear you have quite an international body of listeners.
Yes,
so there's a big a big organization called Vestibular. I think that would just be vestibular.org.
Okay.
And they're based in the US.
Interesting.
So you can have a look at those. And in the UK, we have sort of smaller societies. But the key one that I've worked with is the Menya Society.
Oh, okay.
And there's becoming more sort of information on the internet now. But you can start looking at those organisations. They're good ones to check out. And then there's lots of kind of books and things that are also of interest. Maybe one, if you experience these conditions yourself, there's a book by Shin Bei called Overcoming Vestibular Migraine, and that's a good one.
I'll provide a link in the show notes for that, and as well for the Meunier Society, which, by the way, is a nonprofit charity, and it's aimed at improving the lives of people affected by dizziness and imbalance. So they're a UK-led charity for vestibular disorders, and I'll be providing a link to the show notes to everything mentioned. So yeah, if anyone's kind enough to donate, feel free to go ahead and do so. Thank you, Dr. Laura, for your time. I hope I didn't take too much of it. I mean, it has been a pleasure speaking to you, really. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's been really interesting for me as well. Thank you.
Anytime. You're more than welcome to come back. I'm highly, really grateful for being able to have you here on my show. And I think there's a lot of, wisdom to be gleaned out of your research, because you managed to raise awareness to, what the vestibular system does for us. And you highlighted how it relates to other cognitive and, emotional processes. So I really hope my listeners don't take it for granted. Because I surely don't anymore after, learning of all of this.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Well, thank you so much. Everyone out there, just don't forget to let me know what you think of this episode with a review or a comment, wherever you find my podcast show. I'll be providing an extra link as well to Dr. Laura Smith's profile. To the book and to the book she mentioned and her recent publications. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed this. I'll be talking to you very, very soon. And finally, thank you so much for your interest in science. Bye.